Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Their phones on the blitz with cold.
And you're back.
Let's talk about this in essence.
Okay, we are back with more Leading Edge Medicine, hour number two. And if you have a question for Dr. Umat or Dr. Mixon, now is the time to call in at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Okay, while we're waiting for that next phone call, what should we discuss, Dr. Umat? What is top of mind, or Dr. Mixon?
There is a lot about senescent cell therapies, and then how do we combine that with rapamycin? And I get a lot of questions about that. By the way, I just want to say that my patients that are on rapamycin have been very happy with the medication. Mm. It's not that everybody can identify what it's doing for them. They can't. But some do notice a change. Overall, however, there is no side effect from the medication at all. And I'm checking labs, and labs are looking really good right now. And so, so far, it's mostly, okay, what is the literature saying about rapamycin? What is new about senescent cells? Yes. How do we combine the two, and where are we going?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always been tough. As I was, I think last week, we actually had a long discussion of the limitations of our ability to tell when you need to be tested with senescent cells and or when you need to be treated, rather, and how often you need to be treated and how aggressively. Because right now, we know that senescent cells are building up in every older person.
Yeah.
And they are, in fact, inhibiting the ability of our healthy cells to grow and heal and repair. We think that the presence of an ever-increasing load of senescent cells is one of the primary drivers for what we normally think of as old age, mm-hmm. getting slow, fat, weak, dumb, etc., because those cells occur everywhere in our body, including our brains, our eyes, our kidneys, our hearts. And as the senescent cell load increases, the healthy cells are less and less able to do their job. And so they basically trigger progressive dysfunction and are associated with a increasing risk of virtually every cancer. So lowering our senescent cell load is a very important thing to do. There are some lifestyle things that can help. For instance, the fatter you are, the more senescent cells you're going to make and the longer you're going to keep them. The more muscle mass you've got and the more muscles that get exercised, the fewer senescent cells you're going to have. Those are always good things. The problem is measuring where any individual is. And the only way we've had in the past, in fact, currently, is biopsies. You actually have to take a piece of tissue. For us, I can take a skin biopsy and measure how much or how what percentage of those cells are senescent and dysfunctional. I could poke a hole in your skin and get some fat cells out, and I can measure the senescent cells in those by staining them and counting the cells under a microscope. The problem we've got is that senescent cells are also present in your brain, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, And we're not going to be biopsying those things. And we're certainly not going to do them every 3 to 6 months to see if you need to be treated again.
Right. Yeah.
So that's been our big lack. I have recently come across a team of doctors in Rutgers University in New Jersey that have now published two papers. The first paper was in 2020, the second in 2022. They are now able to measure the percentage of senescent cells in your the CD8 T cells in your bloodstream. And these are immune cells that are critically involved in resistance to diseases and some cancers. And they seem to be a very good indicator of how many senescent cells you've got in your body at any given time. The problem is no commercial lab is doing this test yet. Mm-hmm. It's only been done in their research laboratory. I have emailed the two lead doctors in the studies and asked them to please get back in touch with me. I don't have any evidence. They have seen my email yet because I did put a read notification. So if they read it, I'll know it. These are two doctors I desperately want to get to know. I want to go to their lab. I want to spend some time talking to them. And these are academic guys. If their process looks as good as I believe it does right now, I want to raise some money and put in a lab that will tech this for anybody in the country.
Wow.
So the trick is to get it down to a reasonable cost. Right now, it's a very complex, labor-intensive sort of test. I kind of laughed when I saw their last paper. They said, and we've come up with a simple and reproducible method of testing. And I said, good. And then I looked at their description of what they went through.
Oh, boy.
And they may consider it simple. It made my eyes glaze over.
So, and it might be simpler than it used to be.
Oh, boy.
Yes, that's right. And, okay. These are two PhD, MD immunologists that are, this is all they do and what they consider simple. The rest of us consider incredibly complex. So the question is, how much can we automate it? How much could we simplify it? Can we, raise some funds and get it put into a commercial laboratory? And are they willing to cooperate in such a venture?
Mm-hmm.
So this is, in some ways, the most important part of what I do is find really interesting papers like this and get myself invited to their lab and learn everything I can from them.
Well, I'm sure they'll go to a conference sometime soon, right?
Well, again, these are not clinicians. So whatever conference they would go to would be an immunology conference some sort.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But I've got a sneaky method that I hope will get me into them. I have bought them each a nice gift.
Okay.
Oh.
And I have put my letter, and I am sending them the gift by FedEx, and when they open the gift, there will be my letter right on top telling them how impressed I am with their work and so on, and how much I really, really, really want to talk to them. And please contact me by phone or email.
Okay.
Very good.
Trying to get their attention. He knows how to.
Yes. Very good.
Well, good. That's
okay.
Great.
You ready to go to the phones? We got a
caller.
Let's
go to the phones.
Yep. And here is the number if you would like to talk with Dr. Mixon or Dr. Umat. It's 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Phyllis is on the line calling in from Lake City. Good morning, Phyllis.
Hello, Phyllis.
Good morning. So glad to talk to you finally. I have a problem. I am a client in longevity.
Uh-huh.
I have a wonderful doctor there. A couple of months ago, I began to have horrible feelings in my stomach and my intestines, sometimes pain and sometimes, you know, just general upsetment. So the doctor at Longevity told me to go see a GI fellow, which I did. And he was a young, sharp guy, very wonderful. And he questioned me and he said, from the answers, he said, I can't diagnose you. He said, I want to do an endoscopy and, and a colonoscopy. And I know there are risks to that. So I kind of stepped back. But at the end of our meeting with him, he began to talk about the biome. Not necessarily he was recommending that was my problem. But when I came home, I began to think, hey, a couple of months ago, I made a smoothie from vegetables that were in my refrigerator for a week. And I remember thinking they're kind of questionable, but I went ahead and made a smoothie anyhow, a vegetable smoothie, and drank it all down. And the next day, I remember commenting to my friend that, hey, fiber is good for you, but too much fiber is not good. And so, you know, the feeling never went away. And so I began looking on the internet about the biome, and so I began to change carefully, you know, change my diet to kefir and fermented foods and all of that type thing. And I didn't care what things tasted like as long as they would help. And you know, then also read that if I crashed my biome, which I think I did, to build it back, it would take about, you know, 4 months. And so all of that did help. I did help myself that way.
Okay,
it's not
good.
Quite as bad. It's not, yeah, it's not quite as bad, but it does persist. And especially if I had to take a trip to New York last week, and so I had to go off everything. I mean, I had to eat what was served, and you know, so everything was. So I came home and I was rather hungry. So my stomach area began to hurt actually. So then I ate some things, and that discomfort went away. So my question to you is, what do you think? Do you think I'm doing the right thing, and or do you think I should have the endoscopy at this point? Because I feel there are risks at my age. I'm 90, and I'm, you know, a healthy person, and but I don't want to get myself into something worse.
Well, I agree. Okay. Well, first of all, the risks with endoscopy these days are very, very low. You know, most of the endoscopy risks were from the olden days when we had bigger, thicker, less flexible scopes. So endoscopy today, especially the upper GI endoscopy, looking down at the esophagus, stomach, and duodenum, the risks are almost non-existent.
Good to hear.
Yeah, the lower endoscopy, trying to get through the colon, is a little touchier. And the disaster that people worry about is perforation. If they're trying to thread that scope up through your colon and it gets caught and they push too hard, and they can end up punching a hole in the colon, now you've got a surgical emergency. In 48 years of medical practice, it has never happened to one of my patients. And I have sent a whole lot of boatload of folks out to get their colonoscopy, starting at 50 and doing it about every 5 years thereafter. So,
and they had it in different places. I mean, different.
Yes, sure. I mean, throughout my medical career, wherever I've been, I've sent folks for it. Yeah. So it's you know, while there is a theoretical risk, these days the risk is really tiny. And I can assure you that at your age, they're going to be really, really, really cautious. If they have trouble threading the scope, they'll just back out. They won't force it. It's, So I would not be worried about it. And the reason I'm going to kind of encourage you to go ahead and follow the advice of the gastroenterologist is that this sort of vague symptoms in a woman of your age is potentially a warning sign that you've got a cancer hiding in there somewhere. And, you know, it's not a common, but it's too darn common to ignore the possibility. And you're not going to find it unless you look. And the only way to really look right now is with those scopes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, my dear.
That's my definitive answer. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome, man.
Thank you for the call, Phyllis.
Okay. Bye-bye, Phyllis.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're back with Jim and Dan in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here's the number to get your call in the queue, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. They're gone, are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with two amazing doctors in the studio. We are live with Dr. Samiri Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. And here is that number to get through. It's 800-465-8770. We're headed to Fircrest, and we have Jim on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Yes, very good morning to you all, and happy new year.
Yes.
To every one of us.
How can we help you today?
Some months ago, I called and I was going to have a blood work done, you know, something recommended by my primary care doctor. So I called your program and I wanted to know what tests I needed to ask for. For a background, I have a lot of medical issues, mainly with diabetes and high blood pressure. And then I had a stent done in 2021. So I take a lot of medications, basically all the high blood stuff, metformin, gabapentin, amlodipine. I take rosuvastatin for cholesterol. So I'm under a lot of medications. And I wanted to run some of the test results by the lady doctor, and then see, you know, if I see where I'm at. It says microalbumin UR RAND, it says 17, and then basic metabolic panel.
Uh-huh.
And they have all these. And then, let's see here. Oh, the A1C,
yes,
it's at 6.7.
Okay,
and it used to be at 7.1, and then it was 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
So over the last year, I think it's been coming down.
Very good.
And then the creatine urine. It's at 229.5. Urine albumin 32.8. Then the ratio is 14. And cholesterol 138.
Okay.
Triglycerides 72.
Okay.
HDL cholesterol 57, LDL cholesterol calcium 67.
Okay.
And then I did a vitamin D test, 25 hydroxy 50.
Okay.
But I listen to the program a lot, and I take metformin, and the doctors have been saying that you have to be careful with the vitamin B12 for absorption.
Uh-huh.
So I was taking the vitamin B12 religiously,
mm-hmm.
But my test, the results came out at 1752.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
200 years before I was born in 1952, so I don't think...
Okay. You're funny.
So what do you think about that? I'm looking... My endocrinologist sent me a note and then said that, obviously, I think it's too high, right?
Or, what's too high?
Which one is too high?
Yeah.
The vitamin B12.
B12, okay. Mm. Yes, it is high.
Yep, it's quite high.
So do you think it's as a result of me taking a lot of supplement or what?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The worry that I have, okay, go back to the creatine.
I think he was measuring urine levels, Jerry. That's why we were little. He was measuring about urine,
yeah,
not serum.
Urine.
Yeah.
It's 153.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then do I stop taking the vitamin B12 now, or I cut it in half?
I think you could go ahead and skip it for at least a few weeks. It's a water-soluble vitamin, so it'll clear from your system pretty fast.
Yeah.
And then you can go ahead and use about half that dose.
Okay, because my endocrinologist said he wants me to cut it in half. I wanted to check to confirm that. So you were saying that, and interestingly, that's what I've been doing. I've just stopped it, I think, 2 weeks ago, so I guess I've not been taking it at all. So I'm doing the right thing then. Okay.
Yep. So time to go back on it about half dose.
Half dose, okay. Or every other day, right?
Mm-hmm. That works.
Which one is better?
It doesn't really matter that much. Every other day I work fine.
Okay. And then I did a TSA.
Okay.
At 2.9.
Okay.
Okay. And
what do you think about that?
Well, it's not a high level. You know, anything under 4 is acceptable in people, especially those of you that are, you know, a little long in a tooth. You've been around a while.
Yeah.
So actually, you're what, in your 70s?
Yes, yes. 72, actually.
Yeah, so in 72, 2.9 is not a bad value at all.
Okay. And then there's something called TSH, third generation. I don't know what that means, but it says 1.9. What does that mean?
Excellent.
Thyroid stimulating hormone, and that's right where it ought to be.
Yep.
For my age?
Well,
for
function.
Mostly for anybody, yes. Yeah. It says your thyroid is working just fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then there's CBC with diff or whatever it is.
Right.
WBC.
Yeah.
4.40.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I tell you what, now we've got thousands of people listening here for your blood work.
Yeah, we can't do everyone's blood work on the show.
And it doesn't. Most of what you're saying doesn't apply to the general population.
Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, right, okay.
So I'm afraid you're... Okay, but from what you've told us so far, it sounds to me like you're making progress. Your diabetes is improving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all in all, I am pretty happy with where you are.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And
you take care, sir.
I'll be coming to your place.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be coming to your place too.
Good.
Very good, Jim.
We'll be happy to make you as good as we can possibly do.
That's right.
All right. Bye-bye, Ashley.
Thank you so much for that, Jim. Headed to Auburn now. We're turning right around and going south. Dan is on the line. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Doctor, and I appreciate being able to talk to you guys. I hope it's a simple question. There are rumors about mask mandates coming back again, which to me is crazy. But maybe you can help me with this. You're able to breathe even through the MK95. You can breathe through it, which means it allows air molecules, which are sizable. How about a virus? Is an air molecule smaller or larger than a virus?
Smaller.
And that's why I'm wondering. It is smaller, so which tells me the mask for aerosol is worthless.
Well, here's where it is. It depends on the virus. Viruses come in different sizes, but the pores in the pores in the N95 are small enough that they will stop bacteria very nicely. They will stop some larger viruses. They don't do a great job with COVID. And the more important factor is the mask is not, in 99% of the people, almost all the time, the mask is not properly fitted. They just throw a mask on and go.
And use the same one every day, over and over.
And but it has to fit tightly around your nose and your cheeks and under your chin. And if you've got any air gaps so that you're breathing comfortably, you're breathing around the mask, not through the mask. And so...
Worthless.
Yeah, it's pretty much worthless.
From my experience, I kind of expected that, but I just want to hear from somebody more knowledgeable and experienced than I am.
Yeah, well, my first degree was microbiology, so bacteria and viruses are in my wheelhouse. And I was especially fascinated in the questions of Dr. Fauci when they were actually looking at his emails. In public, he wore three masks, not one. And in private, he told his coworkers not to bother. They don't do any good. Mm. So,
wow. So it's a fake aid. It's
a
joke.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Okay. All right, sir. Have a great weekend.
All right. Take care, sir.
Thank you for that call, Dan. All right. And it is an election year, so what do you think? Do you think they won't mandate? They're not going to want to.
Well, you know, it's sixes. They want to control. They want an excuse to send out tens of millions of ballots to people that are dead or moved and somehow will manage to vote anyway.
Yes.
So they're taking a different tack, of course. They want to put Mr. Trump in jail. What I'm afraid of is if they can't put him in jail, they'll kill him. I have a real fear that he will be assassinated if he's not imprisoned. If they can get him in jail, the hope is that'll swing the vote. You know, 2 or 3% will swing an election in America. And being convicted of a felony will change at least 3% of the population's mind about him. Wow. So if they can convict him of a felony, they've got a good chance of beating him in the election. And if they don't think they can, I have a real fear that he will be killed by a lone gunman somewhere.
All right. Okay, we are taking a break. And we're back with more of your questions. We're going to head to Redmond. We got a question about prostate, I believe. And here is the number to get through today, 800-465-8770. The number in the studio today for Leading Edge Medicine. We're here with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. We'll be right back. Medicine. Dr. Samira Umat here in the studio. Dr. Jerry Mixon. My name is Lynette, and we're taking your phone calls. Now is a good time to get on. We are less than a half hour from the end of the show today. So if you have a question, don't wait until the very end. 800-465-877. And Hilmer, back on the line with us. Hi, Hilmer, calling in from Redmond. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling regarding PAE or prosthetic artery embolization. Dr. Mixon is familiar with that stuff.
Oh, yes.
So I actually, I just had that done on Wednesday. So I'm 3 days after having the procedure done. And I was kind of surprised when I said, nah, we're not going to go in through your groin. We're actually going to go in through your wrist.
Okay.
Or through your arm.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that's a long distance from...
Yeah, it is.
I didn't feel anything. I could actually watch it on the monitor.
Uh-huh.
It was roaming around in there with some wire. And so it was pretty, as procedures go, pretty pleasant, if you can call it that. But, and so I didn't have any pain afterwards. Everything's, you know, I just kind of waiting for it to settle down after. So in relating to that, I was actually comparing that to Rezūm. I was considering doing some Rezūm. I don't like the antibiotics they give you. There's the Cipro, which destroys your tendons, and not a big fan of that.
Yep.
And so I went with the PAE.
Okay.
And so now... going forward, and this is just after listening to you, Dr. Mixon, is that you said that progesterone really does not really shrink the prostate, but it may prevent the prostate from growing.
Yes, it can prevent or at least slow the growth of the prostate, depending on what your progesterone levels are.
Right. So that's another subject. But my self-designed approach to this issue is I did step number one, and I'm also doing the progesterone, 10 milligrams put on your face just like you do. But my plan is to, my theory is that if you can shrink the prostate via the PAE, and then you take the progesterone to stop it from growing back. You might buy some valuable time, or you might... Basically, what do you think about that approach?
I think it's a reasonable approach. The question is, where is your serum progesterone level? It's less what you put on your skin and more how much is in your body. So you need to be following your serum progesterone levels. And you need to also... make sure that they don't get too high. Progesterone is an interesting compound. It is very protective of our skin. In fact, we think that dropping progesterone is one of the major reasons that women get so much crepiness of their skin as they get older. The progesterone keeps the skin elastic and stretchy and tightens it up. And it also then helps prevent that prostate from enlarging. So that's also good news. But at very high doses, progesterone damps down libido. And so the question is, you know, we don't want it so high that it kills your sex drive. But we want it high enough to give you nice skin and a non-growing prostate.
So what I did is I went on for a 3-month period. I used the progesterone, the 10 milligrams, whatever that is, on a daily basis, and then I tested to see where it was at, and it came in at 0.9, if you look at the LabCorp ranges, you know, it says that it should be between 0 and 0.5 or 0.6 or whatever it was. So I said, I'm above the range, I'm at 0.9, so I'm higher than the top of the range, but I'm not, like, two or north of that. So I figure if that seems like a reasonable amount of serum.
Well, yes and no. You are at a higher level than men your age. You are not at high level for a young man with a small prostate.
Right.
Because young men can run up to 9.
Okay. And yet they have libido? And yet
yes.
They have libido at 9?
And yes, they do. You got it. Now,
how do you square that one? It's like if it's too high, you have libido.
That's the normal range for a young man. To really kill libido, you need high doses. What they used to do, I don't know anybody that does this anymore, back when homosexuality was considered to be a sexual deviancy and was against the law in much of the Western world, okay, people who were arrested for homosexuality in the U.S. and in Britain were often treated with high-dose medroxyprogesterone acetate injected into their muscles. And that would give them extremely high doses. I mean, these people would be running high doses of 25 and 30. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was enough to kill their libido. I have had my own at times up as high as 6. And I had just fine libido. I didn't have a problem at 6. What I had was I was getting moody. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like a cycling woman. My mood swings uh-huh. were too high. So I'm trying to carry mine around 2 or 3, that sort of range now. At that range, I don't get moody. I'm just my normal, cheerful, wonderful self. And so...
Does progesterone have a tendency to build up in your fat, to store itself in fat tissue?
It's a steroid, so yes, it can be stored to some degree in fat, but it clears. I mean, if your levels drop, you pull it out pretty fast. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't count on keeping much of it in my as a fat store. But, you know, it may take a while to saturate your tissues, and then your level will start going up.
Well, the question is, after 3 months, and now I'm on the 4th and 5th, and I was going to do another test in a month or so. I mean, it should seems like I maintain the same amount of body fat consistently. So, I mean, I'll just do one more test on that to make sure that I'm not going off the charts. But I think
that's right.
After 6 months, you can pretty much conclude that you should stabilize level, right?
You should be very stable by then, yes. And
right.
a 0.9 is not too high. Don't get excited about that one, okay? Yours truly always runs at least twice that.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, sounds like I'm on to something. So, it's like to control that problem with the prostate.
Okay.
So.
All right, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Yep, thank you for your call. About 18 minutes away from 10 o'clock, and we are going to take a break in just a moment. We have Tom on the line, and we probably have time for one more call as well, 800-465-8770. But wanted to make sure that you are aware, we've got the gallery test coming up at not one clinic, but all 3 of our locations, Kirkland, Tacoma, and in Linwood as well on February 10th.
That's right, yeah, for cancer Prevention Month. Mm-hmm. We are launching this in all 3 clinics. Remember, early detection is the key over here. The sooner you find out, the more time you have to get appropriate treatment and have and live a more healthful life. And we're all about early detection and prevention. So strongly support you taking the gallery test. You do not have to be a longevity patient, but we do ask that you schedule your appointment. And then we are offering our health analysis at that day as well. And I think it's a good time to kind of get a better idea of where your general health is, what is wrong, what is the DNA showing in regards to methylation, biological aging, and chronological aging. So I strongly urge you, if you're at all interested, make this all about you being better tomorrow than you are today, and this would be the first step. So February 10th would be the day.
Very good. A lot of you were very interested in this. We had done it last year a few times,
yes.
And it's back. So don't delay. Make sure that you are on the list. You do need to be scheduled for this.
That's right.
To make sure that we have enough personnel and doctors and medics, mediticians.
No. Well, yeah, no, fancy. The doctors won't be there. It'll be just the team.
Thank you.
But the reps from the company will be there.
Yes.
In the locations, and then
can
the
get
team
that taken
will be
care
here.
Of.
Exactly right.
Mediticians. Yeah. Where did that come? It kind of sounds good, but no, not a word. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we are back with Tom from Chehalis in just a moment. And like I mentioned, we have time for your question as well, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Medicine. Happy New Year. We can still say that. It's just January. It's only the second show of the year, right?
I haven't taken down my Christmas decorations yet.
Oh, yes. I'm leaving out.
I took mine down last Sunday.
Did you?
Oh, you did?
You got yours down. Yeah, I still have my winter
My project up. This weekend since it's cold.
I know. Something to do inside. I've left my snowflakes in winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up, yeah. And I took the Christmassy.
No,
yeah.
I got everything still up.
That's okay. In dark days, it's kind of nice to have the light of the tree. And some
today,
of that.
I'm going to be going outside in the cold and putting a blanket over the top of my wife's tropical tree this year.
Oh, yes.
To protect it.
She's got this tree that we planted as a little tiny 1-foot-high sort of thing. 5 years ago, and it's now about 7 or 8 feet tall.
Wow!
And it's blossoming like man. If it survives this cold snap,
oh,
we should get all kinds of Chinese fruit off of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow!
And I can't even pronounce the name of the fruit. It's just one of those things that you know she has these weird sounds come out of her mouth.
For
that's
her,
the name it sounds
for the
tasty.
Tree.
That's right, but. Yeah, so last week when we heard the cold snap was coming, we went and bought a special tree cover and we put it on. Okay. But then this morning she was telling me it is so cold out that she's afraid the tree cover may not be enough.
Oh.
So she went and got a big blanket and informed me that one of my honeydews for today is to go out and add this great big blanket on top of the,
okay.
the commercial tree cover that
all
we put
right.
on.
You're a little closer to 7 feet than she is.
So. Yeah. Yes, and I'll be on a ladder to boot.
Okay, so you be careful. Don't get blown off that ladder.
Right.
Okay, going to take one last call today. Headed to Chehalis, we have Tom on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
And Tom. Thank you. I had a question in regards to what Dr. Mixon has said on several occasions in regards to how cancer forms. And I was curious because his starts as one little cell and kind of works its way up and starts dividing. And then you don't really start to notice things until it gets big enough to manifest more overt symptoms.
Right.
Now, I was always been told or thought that cancer is something the body deals with on a daily basis, and that it gets rid of, ameliorates them every day. So I'm just kind of trying to equate his version of that and then what I've heard about it. And one other thing in regards to that, when it comes to, he's talked about younger people getting cancer, younger people dying. I do listen to these doctors like Ryan Cole and Robert Malone and Peter McCullough. And in regards to these COVID injections, these messenger RNA with the the fact that what they're seeing are what's called turbo cancers in much younger people. And I'm just wondering how that all correlates to what you were saying today about younger and younger people are getting cancer. So it would be those two things, the genesis of cancer and then the COVID injections in regards to cancer.
Okay, well, let's address both of those. The COVID vaccinations and the COVID infections were something that sprung to mind when I first heard about this. But as I'm looking back at the data, the rise actually started in the 90s, long before COVID. So whatever is going on to give us more cancers in young people has been a progressive process for 35 years. So, you know, not caused by the, now it may have changed the nature of some of these cancers. It may make some of them grow faster. I don't know that for sure. I know there are people that are very suspicious and about that sort of thing. But this incidence of rising cancer rates among the young has been going on long before COVID existed. So
I've never heard you mention it.
Well, that's because it's just gotten bad enough that people have, it's now hitting the medical literature and doctors are starting trying to figure out why. You know, before we were able to ascribe it to things like a more sedentary lifestyle, and increasing body fat. And that certainly has some impact on it. But let's go back to how cancer begins and what our immune system is supposed to be doing. And I think you'll see a tie in there. Okay. Our immune system is designed to separate self from non-self. Anything that isn't you, your immune system is supposed to recognize and go kill, or at least try to kill. Some things it can kill outright. Some things it can just wall off. For instance, if you live down in the southwest of the United States, down in Arizona and Nevada, you probably breathe in some fungal spores that our bodies are not real good at killing. And so what you do is you form granulomas, these wads of scar tissue around the fungus. And when we look at your x-ray, you get these densities, these lumps in your lungs. And that's because the immune system is saying, this is foreign, and for some reason I can't kill it, so let's wall it off. And you lay down scar tissue around it. We call those granulomas. Every time you eat, every time you defecate, every time you poop, you get bacteria flooded from your gums and from your rectum into your bloodstream. And your immune system sees those bacteria and kills them. And that's why most of the time, you know, we eat and we poop just fine and it doesn't do anything bad to us. But once in a long time, some of those bacteria will lodge in a joint and you end up with a septic arthritis, an infection in a joint. And that's especially a worry in artificial joints that don't have its own good blood supply. So, you know, that can happen. When a cell undergoes a mutation, most of those mutations that cells undergo are not viable. The cell will die. It'll mutate and it's not compatible with life and it just dies on its own. Other times, the cell mutates in a way that it becomes essentially immortalized and wants to grow and grow and grow. Those are cancer cells. Our body recognizes those the vast majority of the time and kills them. And so we never were aware that we had a cancer mutation occur. So you're right, that happens a lot. But once in a while, a mutation occurs that allows it to evade your immune system. For some reason, your immune system cannot recognize this or is not effective at killing it. And it just continues to grow and grow and grow. And that is what we are now calling a clinical cancer. That malignancy can get big enough eventually that we can find it. Now, some cancers grow very quickly. Other cancers grow much more slowly. Breast cancers, as a rule, do not grow all that fast. The average woman will have had a breast cancer about 5 years before it gets big enough for us to find it. So when a woman says, oh, my God, I just got breast cancer. No, you didn't, dear. You got that 5 years ago.
Mm.
Okay. A fast-growing breast cancer will only be 3 years before we can find it. A slow-growing one may be 10 years before we find it. So on average, it's about 5 to 7 years that she's had her cancer before it's big enough for us to find. Some other cancers, like glioblastomas, grow much faster. And they basically eat up your brain, and on average, survival is about 15 months from the time we're able to recognize the cancer, which means you've probably only had it 2 years or so.
Wow.
renal cancers grow much faster than breast cancers. Colon cancers are highly variable. Some of them grow very slowly, some much faster. So there's big differences in how fast cancers grow. But the common thing they all have in common is they are able to avoid being killed by your immune system. And that's why one of the cancer therapies that's being investigated right now with a lot of money is finding ways to alter your immune system or to alter the cancer so that our immune systems can find and kill it. And those are called immunotherapies, where we use your immune system to find and kill the cancers for us instead of the drugs and radiation.
Yeah, they're not good.
No. So, and we'd rather not have to use them. So then the question is, you know, at what point are these mRNA viruses altering our immune system or altering the tumors in such a way as to either accelerate their growth rate or to help them evade our immune system? And that's where the concerns are, because the messenger RNAs in these vaccines, they do alter our immune response.
Right. They turn into an IgG4, they call it IgG4 shift, which means it's a tolerant immunoglobulin. And that possibly could be what's involved. Everybody's different. Everybody reacts differently. I know that. I'm in the healthcare field, and it's so different, you know.
I don't think that either. I don't think we're saying two different things. We're just looking at different aspects of the process of getting and avoiding cancers.
Oh, I wouldn't expect you to say something different. I figured you'd probably figure some way that you would know, because I respect you highly.
Well, like I said, too, this is a special interest because this is what my first degree was. It's microbiology. So the human immune system and foreign organisms are, you know, that's what I studied for the first 4 years of my university career. And since I then got my doctorate in medicine, it has stayed a very important part of my life. It's something I read about a lot. So, all right. Thank you for your call, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. We have just a minute and a half left to go of our show today. And boy, it's been busy with all sorts of things we've been talking about here at Leading Edge Medicine. One of the things we do want you to know is that you can still call and get in on that free health analysis appointment in this new year. We don't want you to miss out. A great opportunity, like so many, to become a patient of longevity. And all you have to do to sign up for that free health analysis appointment with the blood test and the in-body test is to give us a call. And you can do that today at 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Or go online to our website, lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. Don't put it off. Don't say, oh, I'll do it next year. No, it's a new year today. Start, and by this time next year, what, Dr. Mixon, you're going to be what?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and of course,
happier. The numbers to call to find out about this and get to know us a little bit better, and also to get some information on the weight management program that we're offering as well to longevity patients and to non-longevity patients. You call that number as well.
Yeah, there are amazing testimonials about that already.
That's so good. 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG, or online, lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. Stay warm. It is burr cold outside. And if you see somebody all bundled up running on the trail, that could be Dr. Mixon, so don't push him down.
It may well be.
That's right. Have a great weekend.